Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon or morning, whatever the heck it is.
Patrick Manley.
I just have some great hair. His hair was sweet, man.
He was a bear for a really, really long time.
Three things you got to do. You got to snap, protect, and cover. I feel like I can do all three pretty well.
Score Bears pregame host.
Coaches say you got to go find a butt. You run off a butt. You run off, you know, your jersey's butt.
252 games, zero solo tackles, but all of your heart.
The level of leadership that he brought in the sense of camaraderie and teammateship.
Patrick Manley with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
He's on Twitter at Patrick Manley. You can find him right here, right now on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Patrick Manley joins us, and usually you're here to talk about the Bears' next opponent, but can't look that far into the future to the preseason or the regular season. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the way that that ended and what's happened, all the quiet in the aftermath that has allowed somebody like Cody Parkey to go on the Today Show and be hailed as some kind of American hero.
All right, we got to start with that one, Dan. I don't get it. I just don't understand it. You know, I'm sure maybe some other shows or different shows ask for an invite for you to come on and talk about it. But if it was Robbie Gould, Brad Maynard, Adam Polish, three of teammates that I respected a lot and we're good friends, I would honestly say, what the heck are you doing? That's what I would say. And it's, I don't know if he got bad advice or, you know, he got advice from somewhere, and I don't know if it's bad advice in his eyes, but as me, if that was my teammate, that's what I would be saying to him. I was like, what the heck are you doing? Why do you need to go on the Today Show and talk about your missed kick? I don't understand the good that's going to come from this. From what I'm hearing so far since this morning, everything's been very interesting, to say the least, around here on Chicago radio or just social media. I just don't see any good that can come from it. I don't understand the timing of it before Nagy and Pace talk. And, you know, it's just, if it was me, I'm deflecting it. I'm not talking about it. And if it was a teammate of mine, I would honestly say, what the heck are you doing?
I would pay good money, Pat, to read through the team group text as that interview was going on.
I guarantee you what's going on. And everybody's saying that. I'm sure they are. I just don't understand it, and I've said it before that now this even more is going to have teammates answer more questions about him, and that's the last thing you want to be as a teammate, as a guy that people are answering questions about, and this is a huge one. I mean, not even just from the media, from walking into McDonald's or the golf course or wherever they're going, if they know they play for the Bears, the first question they're going to ask is, what do you think of Cody Parkey's interview? And guys don't want to answer that.
Yeah, you don't want to be like, what's up with your weirdo kicker?
Exactly. Right? How do you answer that? You can't. I mean, obviously you're going to give the cookie cutter, oh, he's our guy, he's great, and he can do what he wants to do, and it's unfortunate he missed it. But that's just it stinks for the guys that now have to answer that question. I mean, I'm even answering the question all today when I've been running these errands and doing stuff, and I don't even play for him. I don't understand it. I just don't get it.
What's the most important thing in your mind about keeping the defense consistent, keeping it at that high level now that the Bears have had Vic Fangio go on to the Denver Broncos head coaching job?
This is a tough one, man, because, I mean, you look at the last 20 years he's been coaching. He's always been one of the top two or three guys. And how do you replace a guy like that? I don't know if you can. I think internally it's going to have to come from the guys that have been there before with him to understand – that the level of expectations they put on him, and then you hope the next guy that comes in is you know, you hope he's as good. I don't know if they can be, but if they're close and they just keep that pressure on you and keep you thinking that we need to be the number one defense next year, and I just hope the guy that comes in meshes well with all the guys that are already in there. Vic Fangio, whenever you play for a great coach like that, you're always going to compare the next one to the one coming in. You know what I mean? It's just going to happen, and you hope this person – can fit that, can come right in and just make it a smooth transition, and the guys buy in because he's got a lot of talent over there, whoever's coming in, and he's going to be excited to get in there. But, you know, you're also stepping in somebody's shoes that are pretty big, and that's going to be a tough room to walk into.
You know, we were doing the show when the news broke and just kind of spitballing a bunch of stuff as rumors were flying around. And the first couple of things that were asked were, well, could there be a scheme change? And initially I kind of balked at that. But now having looked at it, you know, some sub packages have a 40 front and they have some versatile athletes there. I would still not really like the scheme change because Akeem Hicks has been so much better in a 30 than he had been in a 40, and he's such a gigantic driving force. As good as Khalil Mack is, Hicks was a motor of that defense.
I'm with you, and that's the number one question I thought about was, what do you do? Do you bring in a guy that does run a 4-3? Because you could fit some guys here and there, but Ryan Pace has been drafting 4-3-4 the last few years, and he's been trying to find those guys that play those certain positions. I don't think you do. I think you go and find the best 3-4 guy you can, and you try to find somebody that I guess is going to sell Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy on, I can, you know, work these guys the same way Vic Fangio did and keep them, you know, the top in the league and make us the top in the league. But that's a tough decision to make. But I think with as much drafting has been going on to try to fit these guys into those positions, you stay with a 3-4.
What kind of defense it would be the best steal to sharpen the offense in practice? Because as much as Nagy talks about the value they get in practice and how we don't need to play in these exhibition games because of what we get done in practice, that it matters what you see every day and what you get used to every day. Do you think you're better off playing against a 3-4, or do you think that is overstating the extent to which that matters?
Well, I'll go back to when I was there, most teams ran a 4-3, and I can remember being in offensive line rooms when we played a 3-4 that it seemed like we were installing longer, we were taking a longer time to figure out that defense because you didn't see it all the time, one in games and two because you're practicing against it. But I think now you're seeing, I don't know the numbers, probably closer to 50-50 of 4-3 and 3-4. So I don't think it makes that big of a difference anymore. And then the other thing is, Dan, there's not as much practice time. So you're truly not getting as many physical reps against a 3-4 or a 4-3. You're doing more walkthrough stuff in the off season. Training camp reps are basically half because we're only going one a day. And then during the season, you know, you're going against cards. You're going against scout team guys, and you're going against what's written on the card. So it's tough to say. I don't think either one is better. But right now, or to go back when I was playing, it would be better to practice against a 4-3 because you saw that more. But right now, I don't think it makes a difference.
What about from a roster construction angle? That if you're running a 3-4 and you have the four linebackers, that are you going to be – I don't know if anybody's actually traced this, and I know rules have changed special teams performance and all that stuff because there's returns are so infrequent. But are you apt to be a more effective special teams team if you are at a 3-4 because of how many linebackers you're carrying?
You should be. And I remember Dave Tobe kind of bitching about that. It's like, yeah, I got to only get three linebackers, and we're playing against so-and-so, and he gets four linebackers, he gets that extra guy. But if you look at the Bears, Leonard Floyd doesn't play special teams. Aaron Lynch doesn't play special teams. So that's two guys right there you're taking away that are high-level players. So in theory, yes, if you're a special teams coach or if I'm a special teams coach, I would love to coach a 3-4 team because you are getting more of that body type that is a special teams player. But you're taking, you know, basically less defensive linemen. So, yeah, I would rather have a 3-4. But with the Bears, you have – with last year, you had two less guys that were, you know, you couldn't even touch as a special teams coach.
Going over what's next for the Bears with one of our favorites, Patrick Manley. Follow him on Twitter, at Patrick Manley. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. I wonder, Pat, I've kind of been of the opinion that regardless of who they bring in as defensive coordinator, I'm going to trust, because of their track record, specifically recently, that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy will pick the right dynamic between Nagy on the offensive side and defensive coordinator X doing the defense. But in the long term, do you have any idea how long can Matt Nagy operate without involving himself in the defense? Can he do that forever? Is that not going to be an issue as long as he's the guy he is and the guy he has been?
I do. I think he can. And the one reason why I say that is everybody I've talked to talks about how egoless he is as a coach, that he truly allows people to be their own selves. I think as long as that coach is coaching well, he's going to do that. I think Hub and I talked about it a couple weeks ago, that earlier in the year, if you listen to Matt Nagy in his press conferences, he would always say they. He would always call the defense they. And I'm like, wow, he's really telling us that, you know, he's letting them do their thing. And I think that's he's comfortable and he's fine doing that because he is egoless. He's a great guy in that building, and he's able to keep all the coaches together that way. So I think it can work. And as long as he's coaching at a high level, yes. But if he starts slipping, I'm sure he'll dip in a little bit. But how much does he really know about defense? You know, I watched it with Lovie Smith here. He let his offensive coordinators coach, and then there would be times now and then as a defensive coach telling them, hey, I want to run the ball in this situation to kind of shorten the game a little bit. But it's different when you're the offensive coach telling the defensive coach to do stuff because you don't have the ball in your hands. You really can't dictate the game unless you want to say, all right, bring a blitz here or let's play eight in coverage. But I don't think most offensive coordinators are going to tell their defensive coordinator to do that.
One of the defensive coordinator candidates off the market now, Vance Joseph, is going to run Cliff Kingsbury's defense. I got to get used to saying all this stuff with the Arizona Cardinals. So Vance Joseph goes there, and the Bears have one name crossed off the list to potentially be their guy. Anything lingering from the odd Trey Burton injury and when that happened, how it happened, how strange it was, and then how weird it was how he described what happened? He says his body responds to threats by locking up, and he just couldn't get unlocked.
I found it odd. You know, I'm obviously not in the locker room. I just kind of go back on situations where maybe I've had teammates go through that. I didn't understand that one. I don't recall one where a player came in on a Saturday morning and said, I can't go on Sunday. So that's why I find it really strange. But you have to trust the player. And the one I go back to is, and he got killed on it, was Jay Cutler with his MCL. You know, I was in the training room at halftime with him. I saw him talk to the doctors, and there was discussion of not even going out and trying to do any movements or throw on it. You went out there and you saw him throw on it, and he tried to play. And as a teammate, I saw him attempt to go out there and play, and I was like, all right, the guy can't do it. So I trusted his feeling on his own body, and I would say if I'm a teammate of Trey Burton's right now, I would have to say I trust his feelings on his own body going through that. But sitting on the outside now for 5 years, I just find it odd because I think through 16 years that I played here, I can't recall a guy coming in on a Saturday morning saying my groin locked up after practicing all week. So I don't know if there's more to the story, but I do just, it's odd. That's the only way I could, that's the only word I can describe it with.
What do you remember as the process for, like, you know, season ends, you've got some injuries or what have you, and you know you're going to have to talk with press after the year. Do you get run through or helped out or like a mock sort of like back and forth about here's how you could best answer this or here's how this kind of sounds to you? I think Trey got asked a couple of maybe unfair questions given the whole thing because of the words he used to describe the injury. Maybe I'm looking too far into it. I'm just wondering if players get help on stuff like that, if they need it, or if somebody in a PR office comes down and helps out.
Sometimes, yeah, you saw some people do that. You know, Scott Hagel was great at dealing with situations that were going on, but these would be major situations.
Sure.
He would, you know, pull one guy aside and be like, all right, let's talk through what do you think your message should be and put your words together so you can deliver it the right way. I don't know if they did it with Trey, but it just his answer sounded odd. I don't know, maybe he was uncomfortable that he was unable to go and he felt like he let the team down because his body did lock up. But, yeah, sometimes you would have a Jim Christman or a Scott Hagel pull you aside and kind of just talk through your message. But it just that whole, like I said, the only way I can describe that thing is odd. The whole the conversation was odd on Monday. The injury on Saturday morning was odd, so – you know, is there more to it? I'm sure we'll find out if it is. We always do in Chicago,
yeah.
But I don't know right now. And it's just, God, it's odd. and it's unfortunate he couldn't play because you can tell that it affected the game. You know, when you have a guy go out on a Saturday morning, you've been practicing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You have your red zone in, you have your goal line in, you have your regular downs in, and all of a sudden you're putting a different body in there. And that body, which was probably Adam Shaheen, is working on something else all week. So he's, you know, been in meetings and he should know pretty much what everybody does, but he hasn't been preparing for that specific role, and that's a hard thing to ask a guy to do without, you know, practicing all week.
And in this time, all these bodies are healing up, and guys are getting away from football. Maybe guys are finally eating what they want to eat a little bit, maybe sitting on a couch, maybe playing some golf, and getting back to some sense of normal life outside of the NFL season. When do you want to hear from a coach? When's the next time you want to see that text or you want to have that contact? How much space do they get?
I liked 2 weeks, to be honest with you. 2 weeks was it. And 2 weeks was it for me – for doing nothing. And that was just me. Everybody's different. I'm talking nothing, like you said, just sitting on the couch. And then 2 weeks into it, I would start working out again, because to me, 2 weeks, it took too long to get back to, kind of progressing for the next year. And then I needed 2 weeks to mentally just kind of think about the season on my own. And then that would be the time when, Dave Tobe would text, or, you'd be back from vacation. I would see Robbie or Brad again. We'd do something, but I kind of just needed 2 weeks away from everybody, the weight room, teammates and coaches. And I think it's 2 weeks, but it's different for everybody, but that was me. And I would say that's probably normal for most guys.
What have you thought about the Packers hire of Matt LaFleur, a 39-year-old offensive coordinator, a guy who came over from the Titans with less than spectacular numbers to buoy his case as a head coach, but he's right in the middle of the stream as far as what teams are looking to grab at this point. I wonder what you thought about the division rival there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's what everybody's going to. You know, bringing this young guy in, and the most important thing to me is, two things. Can he lead the team? Can the guys rally around him? You know, you've seen Sean McVay and the guys, the way they react to him. We've seen it here in Chicago with Matt Nagy and the way the guys react to him. Can you get the guys to buy into him? That's number one. And then can he surround himself with quality coaches? I think it's understood that you have to have quality coaches all across the board. From Matt Nagy bringing in a Harry Heastand, can he get one of the top O-line coaches in there? Can he keep Mike Pettine, who I think is a really good defensive coordinator? Can he find the best wide receivers coach that meshes with him and get his message across? That's the most important thing with bringing in guys this young, in my opinion. I think that it can work, but they've got to surround themselves with great quality coaches and then also be able to sell themselves and sell their message.
Pat, we appreciate it. Before we let you go, I want you to weigh in on how you're going to be watching these games, what matters to you, what you're looking at this weekend. Colts and Chiefs, Cowboys at Rams, Chargers at Patriots, Eagles at Saints. As we get over the Bears hangover and just look objectively as fans, what intrigues you?
First, it is just this entire weekend. This is my favorite weekend as a fan, just because it's four quality games in 2 days. So, one, just picture this. I'll be sitting on my couch with about 6 or 7 IPAs each day. And then two, the games that intrigue me, the Colts and the Chiefs, I'm a fan. Once it gets to this point, I start becoming fans, not of teams, but maybe coaches or players that I know around. So obviously with the Chiefs, with Dave Tobe, I'd like to see the Chiefs finally win a home playoff game. I think I read they haven't won at home since 1994, since Joe Montana was a quarterback. And then looking at the Cowboys, Rod Marinelli, who coached me, I'd like to see him do well. That's a guy that I just respect a whole lot from my time with him, and it's amazing. A quick story is that I spent a little time with him, and he still is a coach that I think about daily as one of the best that I've ever been around. Then the Patriots, can they do what they've done forever? Are they on the downswing? I don't know. And then what's the final game I'm missing there? The Eagles Rams. Yeah, I don't want to talk about that one. Can the Eagles continue the run? And then can Sean McVay get over the hump and be the Sean McVay that everybody's pumping out there, that he's the greatest coach ever in the NFL with all these young guys coming out and taking jobs that have been under him. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing, but more importantly, just sitting on the couch and drinking a beer.
Or seven.
Whatever quantity you're in.
Throughout the day, not like in an hour, just kind of sit and
enjoy session beers, yeah.
Bingo.
Session beers.
Yes.
Have fun, Patrick.
All right, we'll see you guys.
That is Patrick Manley, the former Bear. We've got some football. We've got some baseball news we need to discuss.
There's a lot of little tidbits floating around.
Yeah, there's a big signing that could bode well for the Chicago White Sox.
I'm only a little excited.
Yeah.
I'm actually very excited.
And we have a confidential NFL poll regarding quarterbacks, and Mitchell Trubisky's name does appear as an answer, asked all kinds of questions, who players think may be overrated, who players think may be underrated. At one point, we see the name Mitchell Trubisky here.
A lot of good stuff coming up. Fish out the noon hour here on a Friday. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Saturdays from 8:30 to 9. Don't miss Early Odds with Score Guy and nationally renowned gaming expert Joe O. Featuring the latest odds, wagering, and gaming info you need.
Should you back the favorite or the dog? Where's all the smart money going? I'm here to talk about it.
Early Odds with Joe O on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station, and radio.com sports.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
3-2 on DJ LeMahieu. There goes Blackman, the pitch, line to left, base hit in the gap. It's going to go all the way to the wall. Blackman, the ball gets stuck in the vines. The ball gets stuck in the ivy. The Cubs get a break because Blackman would have scored easily. He's going to be sent back to third, and LeMahieu will get a ground rule double.
DJ LeMahieu, I was told the Cubs had some interest in kicking the tires on the veteran, versatile infielder.
Sure, why not?
Who's got some great bat to ball and contact, can play a creditable second base, but he's a New York Yankee.
He is signed, sealed, and delivered, it looks like. $24 million over 2 years for DJ LeMahieu to play in New York.
That's a crowded infield now.
But let me give you some names. Miguel Andujar, they've got Troy Tulowitzki. They'll get Didi Gregorius back at some point. You've got that Gleyber Torres guy. He's very good.
And then whoever now, plays first.
Now you've added, Luke Voit or Greg Bird or the ghost of Greg Bird or somebody. And then where does Manny Machado fit in that infield?
No, they're out on Machado. Right?
I think DJ LeMahieu with 2 years and 24 plus the rest of the names I just gave you.
That tells me out on Machado.
Means that the New York Yankees are out on on Manny Machado.
That would mean it's the White Sox and it's the Philadelphia Phillies and their
mystery
pile
team.
Of stupid money.
And mystery team. There is always mystery team because if they have equally as large a pile of stupid money, then yeah, they're in. But that's kind of breathtaking. I remember the Yankees, as much as any top-tier team, as much as any, upper-level, have-our-own-network, gobs and gobs of money, all of the stupid kinds of money, as much as anybody, they told their fans, they told baseball over the last 3 years that they were working to get down underneath the competitive balance tax so that they could be positioned to sign one of these two guys this offseason. Now they've found other ways around it. I think they're still a pretty damn good team. They're going to spend over $50 million on a bullpen alone with Betances and with Britton and, with Chapman. That's an incredible change in how you figured they spend their money. And granted, Giancarlo Stanton gets a ton of it. But that's quite a thing to have the Yankees out on Manny Machado, seemingly.
NFL news from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. New Jets coach Adam Gase is on the verge of a big hire. Former Browns interim coach Greg Williams is in talks with Gase to become their new defensive coordinator. Things are progressing in this direction, and those involved believe it will get done.
Fine. Good.
That's two defensive coordinator hires already in just the last half hour.
Joseph went to the Cardinals.
Yep.
And it sounds as though I had read a couple reports that said Steve Wilks is in conversations with the Browns or will interview with the Browns for that job there. So a number of those big names, former coaches, all getting interviews and all hopefully lighting up coordinator jobs.
Ian Rappaport now confirms that 30 seconds ago, just said Steve Wilks headed to the Browns.
Oh, well, there you have it.
So he is going, headed to Browns to interview. However, like you say, it is believed that they're bringing him there to bring him there. I need you to pick a number before we get into this survey. A number in the single digits somewhere.
Don't want to ruin the streak here. I'm going to go with 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yes.
Incredible. It's uncanny.
Undefeated.
Caller 7 to the contest line. 312-591-6700. Right now, we'll win a pair of passes to the Cubs convention at the Sheraton Grand Hotel, January 18th through the 20th. For more info and to purchase tickets, visit MLB.com/Cubs.
Also, speaking of the Cubs, arbitration numbers coming out for a couple of their young players, all eligible. I've got Kyle Hendricks, reportedly about $7.4 million. Mike Montgomery gets $2.4 million. Kyle Schwarber at $3.3 million. So the guys left on the arbitration list for the Cubs, and hopefully I don't miss any, but Chris Bryant still has to sign his probably $15 million work. Javi Baez is in year one of arbitration. He'll get a giant raise.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Addison Russell still eligible for arbitration, and that will be news when it comes down, if and when. Carl Edwards, I'm looking at two lists. And that's your list. The White Sox don't have any ARB-eligible players because they're all just really, 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 really young. Or Jose Abreu.
This is from The Athletic. Over the past 6 weeks, The Athletic's NFL beat writers polled defensive players to get answers to our most pressing quarterback questions. They say we received responses from 85 defensive players across 25 teams. The players have been granted anonymity to allow for candid responses. It's important to note these results are not scientific.
Ah.
Some players chose to answer every question. Some skipped a few or specifically answered no comment. The votes for no comment were not included in the percentage calculation. Okay. So, for example, for the most overrated QB question, there were 77 total responses, but 14 no comments. We subtracted the no comments from the total responses before calculating the percentage.
Okay. I love these player polls. Usually guys give you candid, real responses. Usually you don't get that many no comments. That's good to know.
And I can't say there's a whole lot of surprises. Which quarterback would you least like to face in a big game?
Why wouldn't Tom Brady be at the top?
And not just at the top, but an actual majority.
No kidding.
52%. 52%. Aaron Rodgers, 32%. Multiple votes also received for Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes.
Well, that's your list. I mean, that's your quarterback list.
Which quarterback would you most like to face in a big game? Now, there's a couple ways of reading this. And you'll be able to tell by what the answers are.
Okay.
Interpreting most like to face. It tells you a lot about how the way a professional athlete thinks.
See, I'm not a professional athlete, so I want to face an awful, awful quarterback because I'd like to win the game.
Okay. And one of those is the runner-up.
I want a god-awful quarterback, somebody who threw tons and tons of interceptions.
Nathan Peterman got 15%.
Oh, there you have it. Somebody thinks like I do.
However, the top answer was Tom Brady at 18%. And third was Aaron Rodgers at 10%.
You want to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Right. Say, who do you want to – tell you what, who I want to face. If I want to get a win, I want to get a win against the best. But also receiving multiple votes, Jameis Winston, Blake Bortles, Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes.
Even so, split over beat the best or just win a damn ring already.
Who is, they were asked, the most overrated quarterback? And again, this gets
it's not going to be Mahomes.
I'm always asking by whom. Who's doing the rating? What do you mean by who's somebody in general? Is this person believed to be better than you think he is?
Also, answering this question also lets you know that players do read the press clippings.
Of course they do.
You know, they pay attention to the stuff and they pay attention to reputation around the league. Is it going to be Aaron Rodgers?
No, and not on the list, did not get any votes.
I thought maybe because of the season and the injuries he's had, he might drop a tick or two.
It's a guy we talked about a lot, and it's a guy that Sage Rosenfels broke down repeatedly. It's a guy who's very wealthy.
Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, 13%. Nicely done. Kirk Cousins at 13%. Eli Manning, second at 10. And what's fascinating is that both of those guys, Cousins and Manning, were described on this show by Rosenfels as propagative mistake guys.
Yeah, that's right.
They take a little error that turns into a larger error.
In a given play.
Correct.
And that was, when listening to Sage talk about it, you thought, you heard him say, well, one mistake begets more and more and more.
Yeah, he said it about both of them.
During the course of a game. He's like, no. One mistake on the snap leads to more mistakes in a given play, which leads to your interception, your pick six, or just failing to get into the playoffs.
They're crumbly like shortbread. Also receiving multiple votes, Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, Tom Brady, Derek Carr, Andy Dalton, Dak Prescott, Jameis Winston, and Sam Bradford.
People had a lot of opinions on who's overrated.
Whole lot of overrating going on.
That was just a lot of Jalen Ramsey votes.
He gave you a whole list. What was the last name you had there on the also receiving votes?
Sam Bradford.
Sam Bradford got votes for overrated?
Yeah, who thinks he's good?
Who got drafted right after Sam Bradford? Because it's that guy who just voted for being overrated.
Okay, now we get to the most underrated NFL quarterback. Most underrated.
I'll zig Colin Kaepernick.
No, he's on a different – we're going to get to him.
Oh, separate list. He got broke out. I flipped my quiz over. I didn't want to know.
Different question. But the top answer, oddly enough –
Carson Donald?
The top answer for underrated among defensive players in the NFL who are voting on this. This is a guy who's a Heisman Trophy winner, a top overall pick, and a former MVP.
Oh, Cam Newton.
Cam Newton got 14% of the vote. Phillip Rivers got 11%
for
most underrated.
And I get that.
And Alex Smith got 8%. Also receiving multiple votes for most underrated quarterback, Russell Wilson, Mitchell Trubisky.
No kidding.
Drew Brees and Lamar Jackson.
Trying to think if those guys all have something together about them. They do kind of feel like that dual threat. There are a bunch of dual threat
options. I was going to say, it sounds like defensive players respect elusiveness.
Yeah, and maybe the national vibe of the NFL doesn't give enough credit to quarterbacks who can make it happen either way. Drew Brees the only non-dual threat guy on that list. I'm trying to think back to the names you just gave me. Cam Newton, Lamar Jackson, Mitch Trubisky. You didn't have – Dak wasn't on that list.
No, Phillip Rivers, Alex Smith.
Rivers. Okay, so Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees, the two less mobile guys on that list.
Yeah. Everybody else, it sounds like that the defensive players can be easily frustrated or have a little outsized respect for the ability to be difficult to bring down. Most impressive quarterback under age 25. That's an easy one.
Yeah, that's Mahomes.
72% said Patrick Mahomes.
Only got through 50 touchdowns.
Jared Goff got 11%.
Cinches that up.
Deshaun Watson, 10%. Multiple votes for Carson Wentz. Most impressive rookie quarterback.
Darnold? No.
Baker Mayfield, 60%. Sam Darnold was second at 21%. Lamar Jackson received 7% of the vote. However, many of the players gave their responses in November before he replaced Joe Flacco as the starter. So an easy one there for Mayfield. Should Colin Kaepernick be on an NFL roster?
If this isn't unanimous, I'll be somewhat surprised. I would bet everybody said yes.
85 votes, 81 said yes. Two players said no comment. Two players voted no.
Okay.
The question was phrased in a way to ask whether Kaepernick has been unemployed since 2017 and has filed a collusion suit against the NFL saying he's been blackballed, should be on a roster, not whether he should be a starter.
Okay.
Should be on a roster. 95% said yes.
Feels right. I get it. That feels right.
Now, if you could replace one NFL quarterback with Colin Kaepernick, who would you pick?
Well, my guy, Nathan Peterman.
He's second. Nathan Peterman got 18.
He couldn't even fit number one.
He got 18% of the vote.
He lost in the who sucks most poll.
Blake Bortles got 20% of the vote. He won it. Nathan Peterman got 18%.
It really does kind of feel like they dragged this thing through the Jags locker room first.
Yeah, kind of, right?
Anybody want a piece of this? Anybody? The entire defense leapt up and tried to answer all in unison.
Yeah, also receiving multiple votes, Eli Manning, Josh Allen, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, and Josh Rosen. Which backup quarterback should be a starter?
Well, I guess it would depend on when the poll was administered, but
correct.
It's got to be Foles.
It is. 32% said Foles. The runners-up were Teddy Bridgewater at 17%. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Fitzmagic, to start this year.
Okay, all right.
At 15, multiple votes for Lamar Jackson, Tyrod Taylor, and the Saints' Taysom Hill.
So not in their given place, but a starter elsewhere.
I guess so.
So not necessarily starting over.
Should be a starter.
A starter.
Now,
okay.
Maybe it's not necessarily the starter.
I mean,
maybe
Nick Foles will be a starter next season somewhere. You'd give odds on that, right?
Okay, now.
It's already being reported that Eagles are going to have a nice size market on him.
Sounds like it, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. You'd almost have to. Lamar Jackson on that list, too, but again, it depends on when the poll was administered, who's going to vote one or the other.
And did you see that Nick Foles was actually the best quarterback while pressured?
I did see that.
Should have informed the Bears.
Well, when we were talking about it, I mean, the guy had, given the numbers, getting the ball out quickly and accurately, it might not go downfield as much as it did in the last year magic run thing, but he's, by some marks, better than he was last season.
Just three more in this survey conducted by the Athletic staff. Which quarterback is most dangerous on third down? Again, these answers were given
Lamar Jackson.
By 85. Well, I remember when it was taken.
This
is given by 85 different NFL defensive players answering anonymously. Most dangerous on third down. The top answer, 34%, Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
Russell Wilson, 13%. Patrick Mahomes, 12%. Multiple votes received by Cam Newton, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, and Deshaun Watson. This was interesting. Actually, these last two are very interesting. Which quarterback would you most want as your teammate in the locker room?
Mitch Trubisky.
That guy.
They were not allowed to vote for their current quarterback. You had to vote for somebody who wasn't. You couldn't vote for your guy.
I'll go with Brees.
Not on the list.
At all.
At all. Did not receive multiple votes.
I don't know.
Aaron Rodgers. despite everything,
despite all of it,
despite everything we've gone through this year and everything that's been said and the firing of a coach and all that, 25% said Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady got 22%. Cam Newton, 13. Multiple votes for Philip Rivers, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and Carson Wentz. And, you know, there's another, you can also look at it like wanting him as your teammate is also saying,
it's you get the success that comes with correct. The quarterback, not necessarily all the issues correct. And headaches that might come around.
Now, that's different than this. Lastly, and this had the most no comments, 29 players declined to answer. Which quarterback would you least want as your teammate in the locker room?
Roethlisberger.
Tied for second with 11%.
He's got a bad reputation. It's not Rivers. Rivers, teammates like Rivers, despite the national.
But Rivers got multiple votes.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Bortles.
Bortles got multiple votes.
Eli.
Eli's
too likable a guy, or at least I would guess, even though he's bad. Who's the top getter?
Cam Newton.
Oh.
14% said Cam Newton. 11%, there was a tie between Roethlisberger and Jameis Winston. And then the other multiple votes were the aforementioned Bortles and Rivers, Josh Rosen, and Nathan Peterman.
Rosen after 1 year in the league.
Think about that.
Rosen with 1 year in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already getting votes for not wanting to be in a team.
Mm-hmm.
That's
not good for him, is
unfortunate.
It?
Unfortunate. No,
you're on the
not.
Joey Harrington path.
Wonder if he gets moved. I wonder if that's some. I mean, listen, Cliff has been all over Kyler Murray, whether it's for PR purposes because he got his ass stomped at Texas Tech or because he likes him as a quarterback. I'd be fascinated to watch that.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves are the highest scoring team in the AHL. They boast a combined 20 international hockey medals for the 25th anniversary. Enjoy free parking courtesy of Kia, high scoring winning hockey, and free parking. Chicago Wolves. Last team standing. You want to win $1,000?
I do.
Start your weekend extra grand in your pocket. You've got to be listening for the keyword I'm going to give you next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
They always have signs, please clean your stuff out of the fridge. Keep stuff out of the fridge. Keep it clean and stuff. It is a disgrace. Usually when a refrigerator reeks like this one does, it's got to be open. This one doesn't need to be open. It's closed. Our original studio is on Belmont Avenue. You could probably smell this all the way over there. I would love to take this fridge and dump it in the Chicago River. The only problem is it would pollute the river. And just so that everybody knows, I'm not making this stuff up, Julio. I mean, this is absolutely pathetic.
Yeah, it's a pretty vile smell.
No, it's not that good. It's not that good.
That's horrendous.
Horrendous and vile would be an improvement of what this thing is. Absolutely terrible. This is basically the way I would describe this fridge here.
Not the teacup.
Yes, you think
it's going to
end in a sickening crunch of twisted metal, and it just takes out a teacup.
Shattered ceramic. Ugh.
Oh, no.
It was a vintage teacup.
It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is year. Text year to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is year. 272-881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Don't you dare mute Kurt Cobain. Actually, I don't think it's actually not Kurt
what?
Cobain. It would be he'd be muting Chris Novoselic and Dave Grohl, right?
Well, no, the guitar part in the background. Kurt Cobain's playing that part.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, you catch what Rick's doing here? Smelling what he's stepping in. Smells like Teen Spirit.
I got it.
Refrigerators.
I don't get them all, but I get some.
Took me a minute. I'm usually late on the uptake for that. The Adam Schefter note for the coaching carousel says on the day the Cardinals are landing former Broncos head coach Vance Joseph as their DC, former Arizona head coach Steve Wilks is visiting Cleveland Browns to discuss their defensive coordinator job. We had that. Chris Morton's saying, though, on the offensive side, Steve Sarkisian closing in on the offensive coordinator job with the Cardinals. Now,
why would you hire him?
Before you panic, remember, he won't have Julio Jones to take off the field on third down in the red zone there
just
in Arizona.
Just Larry Fitzgerald.
He'll just, yeah, it's just me.
Why would you hire him?
I don't know why you would hire
him. He makes your offense worse.
Unless Kingsbury just feels like he's able to extrude whatever he can from Sarkisian.
Or if Kingsbury
is his
enough,
offense anyway.
Enough in charge anyway. He just needs somebody there shuffling papers.
He wants Sarkisian as more of a coach and whatnot. Do we know? Have you read whether Cliff is going to call plays?
Yeah, he said he's calling his own plays.
Okay, I figured as much. I hadn't seen that for sure. All right, so that's just Sarkisian's going to be a caretaker.
We also have...
That's the guy you want to put in charge of taking care of things.
There is a defensive coordinator spot that will not come open, as Pro Football Talk reports that Matt LaFleur has confirmed that Mike Pettine will stay as defensive coordinator of the Packers.
That's a good move on Green Bay's part, I think.
Sometimes the best move is the move not made.
Yeah. Well, that's worked out for them. That really, really is a copycat hiring from the Bears.
They're doing the Bears thing.
They took the guy who looks like and is the same age and did the same job, put him in as head coach, and then convinced him to keep the old salty veteran defensive coordinator because that's what he needs. Boy, that's bizarre. We talked about this the other day. When's the last time the Bears were out in front? They are out in front.
The 262 says, you look at that Cardinals team. He's got Rosen and Sark and Kingsbury. That's the all-penis team.
They got to fight.
That's going to be
They got to have fights in the quarterback
room. Yeah, that quarterback room is going to be something. And I don't think it's fair to put Josh Rosen in that category right now, even though we just found out the NFL players already have in the way they're voting on it. And I made the comp to Joey Harrington. And Joey Harrington was just never – he wasn't really all that good. And second of all, he kind of – wasn't football-y enough for people.
I don't think Joey Harrington – correct me if I'm wrong. I never heard anything about Joey Harrington being disliked by players. It just seemed like nobody got him. He didn't quite fit in. I don't know that that's the same with Josh Rosen. I honestly don't know. Obviously, he's been in the league for a year and hasn't played an entire 16 games either. So I think there's probably some getting-to-know-you stuff going on with a quarterback that's got his background and his, you know, just general sense of life. But that seems like it might grind on the old football thing more than Joey Harrington, who, you know, seemed to just be not got by people. I don't get the guy.
And he's always
kind of weird.
Yeah, he played the piano. He referred to himself as a dork, and he was just kind of like a guy who happened to play football, but wasn't one of these football's really important to him, football consumes his life kind of guys. And I don't know if you need a quarterback to be that. The Bears have one in a quarter. I mean,
yeah, where football is life. I think you just have to, if you're going to be that guy who, you know, kind of like Cody Parkey said on the interview in the Today Show, that football is what I do. It's not what defines me.
It's not who I am.
If you're going to say who I am. If you're going to be that guy, you do have to be able to speak the language. You have to be able to talk with your teammates. No, God, no. Kicker doesn't have to talk to anybody. Just show up, go to Soldier Field, and kick your kicks.
Quarterback does have to be able to relate because he's the most important guy in that building.
Yeah, you have to be able to speak that language or at least translate it in your head.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves are the highest scoring team in the AHL and boast a combined 20 international hockey medals. For the 25th anniversary, enjoy free parking. Courtesy of Kia, high scoring, winning hockey, and free parking. Chicago Wolves, last team standing. Your Friday on the Score is going to continue with the Scorers afternoon show of McNeil and Parkins. They were kind enough to bring some Greek food yesterday, and I couldn't stop noshing. I happened to be sitting
there. You took some of their Greek food?
Well, no, it was sitting there. They took all their food. They were full. And the leftover containers were sitting right by the computer where I usually will write my little post-show piece. And
yeah.
I kind of kept noshing and I kept grazing.
They were up for sale. I didn't know this. I would have picked at it some because I'd not had a whole lot of Greek chicken. Was it good? What'd you pick for?
Oh, everything. There was like a little souvlaki and there was some gyro meat. There was some octopus.
Because you know me, I'll try everything, but there are just a couple of things that like kind of weird me out. What are the things wrapped in the leaves?
Somades.
Well, I don't know about the leaf-wrapped stuff.
Stuffed grape leaves.
What's that?
With got like a lemon butter on it. And
I don't know.
Stuff with a little
texture thing going on there.
Ground lamb and rice inside.
Oh, that's lamb inside.
Lamb and rice, yeah.
Lamb and tuna fish. I would do that.
It's good. You should try Dilmati. It's good for you.
Okay.
Cure what ails you.
We need that.
And the stuff they did with The Sopranos yesterday was really a lot of fun. I was riveted to some of that conversation. We'll talk to them about that and more and life. Next, Transition on the Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.